Texas is now battling a fresh threat. More than 130 wildfires are burning across the province. As of late on Thursday, 1st of July, 86 of which started in the past 2 days. Evacuation orders and alerts have already gone out in a dozen communities. The province's premier, John Horgan, suggested that the crisis could become dire enough to see the Canadian military being deployed. There was a similar picture in western United States. Hundreds of firefighters battled the high heat against several wildfires in the forests of Northern California, where the flames have already forced many communities to evacuate. Mount Shasta, the volcano that towers over the region, was shrouded on Thursday, 1st of July, in a haze of smoke plumes so huge they could easily be seen in images from weather satellites in space. In British Columbia, Western Canada, it was supposed to be a week of tentative celebration. Thursday was the day that the province's COVID-19 state of emergency was lifted. But now the province is likely to be facing a new state of emergency over the wildfires. Absolutely, we may well, depending on how the wildfire season starts to unfold, require a provincial state of emergency, such as we have seen in our past 5 seasons in this province, the province's public safety minister, Mike Farnworth, said. In the village of Lytton, where a wildfire struck with such fury that residents had mere minutes to evacuate the village, an unknown number of residents were still unaccounted for on Friday, 2nd of July. Community Facebook groups were brimming with posts by residents desperate to track down their missing loved ones. Meanwhile, the Vancouver Sun has reported at least 2 people died attempting to shelter in a hole in the ground as the wildfire raged on.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Assalamu alaikum. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm your host, Mudaffar Haider, here in the studio. Today we have with us Sayyid Mahdi and Sheikh Ali. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam.
So we were talking about how the rapper approves things, the leader approves things. He gives his kind of seal of approval to whatever decisions that the people make. So, okay, then, I'm from the UK, so I immediately think of the system that they have in the UK. The Queen has to give the stamp of approval to the Prime Minister, who's elected by the people in the House of Lords. So, what's the difference?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, if you look at Iran, there are four elections that take place here at the macro level. One is for the city management. The other one is Majlis-e Shura, which is the parliament, right, the Iranian parliament. Third one is the Assembly of Experts, which is these 80 plus, you know, 88, I think, is the number, mujtahids and jurisprudents. And then their job is to keep an eye on the supreme leader, mm-hmm. right, and the rahbar and the leadership, Islamic leadership, in case, you know, something happens. Number fourth is the presidential elections, right? These are the four types of elections that take place at a macro level in Iran. And this is where people are directly involved. People have a say, right? Now, when we talk about this approval from the leadership, right, the Islamic leadership, the Waliul Faqih, we see that whether it's the, you know how there's a two parties in Iran. One is known as Usul Gara and the other is the reformist, right? The principalist and mm-hmm. the reformist. No matter which side's representative wins the votes, the leadership has, if you look at the history, has approved it. So it's not like the leadership is partisan or is siding right. or leaning on one side. No, there's a fair competition that takes place. And at the end of the day, the fact that whether they're from the principalist side or their reformist side, it doesn't make a difference in the final approval from the leadership, right?
Mm. Excellent.
I mean, this I have a question about that, but I think I want you to finish your trail of thought.
Okay. So this is important again, you know, this Islamic leadership is not supposed to, is not expected to, and alhamdulillah, up until now, has not done this, that they become a, you know, side in this whole equation. No, there's a fair competition where the input of the people and the voting of the people is respected, and rahbar takes it into consideration in that final approval. And then, again, like we said, and this is something that needs to be understood, that the legitimacy for this president comes from the leadership.
Okay.
Yes, the people had their input, but people did not give this president the legitimacy. It's the Islamic leadership. Again, we have to understand yes. Islam mm-hmm. and Islamic model, right? Remember, we were talking about mm-hmm. this comparison between the liberal democracy and, as they call it, Islamic democracy, or we're calling it Mardum Salariya Dini, within the system of the Wilayatul Faqih, right?
Popular religious governance.
Popular religious governance, right? So there's this is fundamental difference,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then also, very quickly, before they run for the presidential election, it's not like any Tom, Dick, and Harry can run. There are departments, there are councils, there are these setups that are in place to make sure that the person who is running for the presidential elections, he qualifies to be someone who should be sitting at the seat of the president. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, you know, oh, somebody just wakes up and, you know, he's running in the mm-hmm. elections, next thing is, no. There's a proper vetting process, mm-hmm. and this is pre-elections.
Right,
what
right,
we
right.
talked about, the endorsement, was post-elections mm-hmm. by the leadership.
It's a very, right? it's a very,
it's a very airtight in a way.
Yeah,
you
I was
going
to say foolproof, but
yes.
yeah.
They try to make sure that the person who's running, you know, he qualifies to be up there. You know, mm. if I were to draw a comparison like Sayyid Mahdi did, right? You know, a person like Trump can really not come into power
mm-hmm.
in Iran. Because for several reasons. One of them is that Iranians are way more intelligent than Americans, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Americans have been victim to the mainstream media and the propaganda
and
the lobbies and mm-hmm. the education system. It's a long discussion. But that's one of the reasons. The other is the system itself, right? That makes sure that someone like Trump, you know, using him as a symbol, right? He cannot just crawl in and become a president through electoral votes and stuff. You know, it's in the Western liberal democracy, people who bubble up to the top are generally speaking, actually, I can say all of them, but let's keep it to generally speaking. They are those touts of the multinationals.
Mm.
They're the touts of those lobbies who invest in their election campaigns. Mm-hmm. And this is another thing, remember, we have to talk about the election campaigns in Iran, how they're different from, because now we're getting into those nitty-gritties, right? But generally speaking, in liberal democracies, these people are the touts, the mouthpieces, and they're the laborers mm-hmm. of these big, huge, multinational lobbies and corporations. While in Iran, things are very different. The point is that when you look at the lives of the presidents, generally speaking, you know, in Iran, they have a very mardumi and a very simple lifestyle.
Of course.
Right? Yeah, yeah. They don't, you know, once they become president, they're up in the skies, you know, and then after they leave the presidential seat, they have these huge castles and airlines now, and they have big pharmaceutical companies established. No, it's not like that. We've seen, like, at least 12, and the best of those examples is Imam Khamenei himself when he was the president. If you look at his life, his character, his bank account, you know, it's so crystal clear. Alhamdulillah, people, that's why people trust him. You look at Shahid Rajai, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. There have been so many good presidents. Iranians had some not so good presidents, but yeah, this is how it is here.
So we see that in the West, I mean, at least in the UK, there's this vast amount of distrust in regards to the political system. Lots of people don't even want to vote anymore, and they say there's no point in... Is there a similar sentiment to this in Iran, or...?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Interestingly, this sentiment of not trusting the system to a large extent is not found in the Islamic Republic of Iran, right? And we have some statistics and we have some numbers as well that we can share a little bit later on in the program. But you will see that the large majority of the people do come out and they do vote, they do participate in elections, they participate in the campaigning. Interestingly, I would request any political theorist, anybody who is interested in political science, political theory, and, you know, to see the ground realities between what is happening with Western liberal democracies across the world, how they run their campaigns, how they run their elections, how do the people participate in the elections, in the campaigning, and how much the people trust their system in those countries. And the numbers reflect this. I believe Sheikh Ali has some solid numbers that he can bring up about these elections and the amount of participation. But I think also on a large part, if you go and you look at these Western liberal democracies across the world, whether it's the United States or whether it's the UK, you will find that the people don't trust their system. And why? Because the system has failed the people. The system is no longer controlled or is not owned by the people. The people do not feel like they are an integral part of the system, which claims to be doing what it is doing for the people, right? If you go at least into the United States political scene, you will find that special interest groups, lobbies, big pharma, military industrial complex, big agro business, these are the guys who are running the show. They're the guys who are funding and paying for these candidates to come up to the top. And then, of course, you will find that it is these same companies who funded these candidates who are the ones that are getting all of the benefits of the person being elected. The people are the least consideration, and the people have lost faith in those systems.
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge amount of despair, actually, out there where people just don't believe it anymore. And I think one of the most telling examples is what's going on right now with the Yellow Vest movement in France.
Right.
I don't know if you've seen that video of Macron being slapped. Well, hey, I mean, that's a really nice thing to see. It got my juices flowing, alhamdulillah. But there is this absolute, like, despair, intolerance, this feeling of disgust for the political systems out there.
And of course, right, see, I mean, just to kind of follow up on that, right, is that look at the people that are being elected, right? These people, they come out, for some reason, they have full faith in the electoral system. They have full faith in that you're going to elect a person who's going to help you and save the nation and all these things. Every single time, and I'm specifically talking about the United States of America, every time the people have voted for somebody based upon their campaign promises, they found out that these campaign promises are just campaign lies.
Completely
empty. It's just total fraud that they come up and they tell the people, right? And look at the type of people that are being elected. It's interesting, you know, you'll find sometimes you do a little bit of research, these people have serious, psychological problems. These things about sexual harassment, sexual and physical abuse, sexual harassment, they come out about a lot of these candidates. And, you know, so when you are consistently seeing this, that the people you elect are lying to you, the people you elect are going back on their promises, the people that you elect are psychologically diseased.
Oh,
they're ailed.
It's just become a running joke, actually, in the West, that, you know, the politicians do their job. What is their job? To go up there and make empty promises, and then immediately, as soon as they get voted for, you know, fall back on those promises, not fulfill any of them. It's just a tired old thing. Now,
well, when it comes to elections and voting and, you know, presidents and then their policies, right? Definitely there is going to be polarization between two groups in order for them to be two groups. Mm-hmm. If there was no polarization, they would be considered as one group.
Why,
right?
Is there not three or four?
As a matter of fact, there are more parties, but generally what happens is because the world has gotten used to of this two-party elections in almost, you know, in almost major, you know, so-called democracies. That I think it ends up being two, while if you look at the, even in America, if you look at, you know, there are other parties there that we don't even know the name of. So if I were to ask you, you know, in America, if you know a third or fourth or fifth party that is other than the Democrats and the Republicans, you would have a hard time. You would have to probably Google it up, right? Mm-hmm. In places like Pakistan, for instance, you look at, you know, historically, it's just been those two parties, you know, Muslim League and People's Party. These are the two parties.
There's always like this more conservative group and more liberal group, and they're on both sides of this kind of center.
Yeah, honestly, like these terms, unless they're opened up and they're defined properly, they're used very loosely. Because what happens is, like, one party, they may be very conservative in one area, but very liberal in another. And the party opposite to them may be very liberal in that particular area and conservative. You know, so it's a vice versa thing. I don't think there's an absolute conservative and absolute liberal, and especially if they're not even defined. You know, everybody has a different definition of what liberal means and conservative means. Now, in Iran, too, like, you know, we have these two major parties. One is called the Principalists, Usulgara, and then we have the Reformists, which are Islah Talab, right? These are just the labels, right? So, really, like, it's a healthy competition when you look at it in Iran, especially. It's a healthy competition where they have objections on each other's policies, and it's a very natural thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that's why you end up having those two parties that kind of bubble up and surface up in every system.
That's all we have time for today. We hope that you enjoyed and benefit from the show. Inshallah, we're going to talk more about these things in later episodes, if Allah gives us the opportunity. From myself, from Sayyid Mahdi, and from Sheikh Ali, we bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you so much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. You can log on to our website at parstoday.com, and you can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, goodbye.
A symphony of nature. Oh, it's taken my breath away. I'm so blessed out here today, yeah, Allah.
thought.
Hello, dear friends. For your information, when a person asks Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Reza, peace be upon him, as to who are the best servants of God, the Holy Prophet's eighth infallible heir replied, "Those persons who, when they perform a good deed, become glad. When they commit a bad deed, they ask the forgiveness of Allah. When they are granted, they thank for it. When they are afflicted and grieved, they exercise patience. And when they get angry, they forgive the faults of others."
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The light.
The pandemic has not stopped this British musician from holding live concerts. His audience is a very special group in Danish rural areas. Jacob Shaw, a university professor, is the man behind this experiment. He says playing for the animals has been his second best option after the pandemic forced the cancellation of many events and social gatherings. Shaw says the performance for the cows has been so rewarding that he wants to continue it even after public spaces are reopened. He says the cows seem to enjoy classical music very much.
They react differently to different pieces. We played something that was slightly more upbeat, a little bit more modern, and a lot of them didn't like it and they went away. And I think that the type of pieces which is closer to their voice, closer to their mooing, which could be similar actually to a cello, which is why it's so successful with them, they prefer that.
The cello player is sometimes accompanied by other musicians. They say the experience has helped them practice and also relieve some of the stress of a live concert.
Science fiction has turned into reality, or at least that's how the developer of AirCar describes his vehicle when it transforms from a car into an aircraft in less than 3 minutes. This prototype flying car was designed and created by Slovakian transportation professor Stefan Klein. He says that his design opens a new category in transportation. The dual-mode vehicle composed a 35-minute flight in this week between the two Slovakian airports. So far, it has completed more than 40 hours of test flight. AirCar can fly about 1,000 kilometers at a height of over 2,500 meters. That makes the dream of those who wish to ride above traffic closer to reality. A digital art museum in the Japanese capital has unveiled a stunning exhibition offering visitors an intimate interaction with nature. One of the attractions of the show is Floating Flower Garden, which is a mirrored room filled with 13,000 orchid flowers. The orchids are dangling from the ceiling and move up once a visitor walks through in the space and approaches the flowers. Once the visitors move past the flowers, descend again. This makes the visitors able to freely wander around the three-dimensional flower mass space. Tokyo-based digital art group Team Lab that runs this exhibition says the artwork is designed to help people think that they are part of the garden.
This is an installation filled with these flowers. As you walk towards them, the flowers slowly move up to create an area of space for you. Surrounded so completely by flowers, you feel immersed in the flowers, the garden itself.
There are several other installations in this exhibition. One is an outdoor piece filled with lit sculptures that light up after the sun sets. Visitors can see 61 different colors of light in this section. When one of the outfits is tipped over by a hand or the wind, it emits a sound. The sound is then echoed by the surrounding outfits. In a school in the Ukrainian capital, kids learn about saving the environment and helping those in need through a creative way. Students put plastic bottles in a machine as currency. Then they can select what they would like to spend money on. Buying food for stray animals and donating to children with special needs are some of the choices. The project was first launched in a mall in Kiev a few months ago. Afterwards, the designers found out that children were the most frequent users of this machine.
A child drops a bottle inside and sees an immediate result. It brings joy and happiness, and everyone is excited and wants the project to thrive.
The founders seek to install more and more machines in schools across Ukraine to raise environmental awareness among younger generations. Since the start of the project in October last year, over 5 tons of plastic has been collected from 6 machines.
India is known not only for its cultural diversity, but also for a vibrant assortment of uncountable dishes. Butter chicken is the only one delight you wouldn't like to miss while visiting Indian restaurants, especially if it is prepared by a celebrity chef like Saransh Koila. Koila's coal-fired oven is now sending a mouth-watering scent through India's commercial hub, Mumbai, as the young chef takes a break from COVID-19 relief efforts and resumes work. He is the one who established the first global butter chicken brand and authored the acclaimed food travelogue, India on My Platter. But with the coronavirus forcing people into isolation, his networks were also hit. So Goyla launched a non-profit platform called COVID Meals for India in April to connect thousands of volunteer home cooks and frontline workers.
The pandemic had a large impact on our business. Having said that, Goyla Butter Chicken from the start was always focused on deliveries and takeaway. So in that sense, our loss of revenue and a loss of business was slightly lesser than an average restaurant. But a lot of my friends, restaurateurs who are in this industry have gone through an extremely tough time. The pandemic has taken its toll on our industry, and I think it has set us back by at least a couple of years.
Koila found his calling early, winning a televised cooking competition at the age of 25, which led him to host a travel program showcasing regional Indian cuisine. His profile exploded in 2018 when he was invited by former MasterChef Australia judge George Kalambaris to be a guest on the hit show, with contestants asked to recreate his signature dish.
Graduation is an exciting moment for all schoolgoers, but the occasion turns more joyful if it ends with a celebration like Scarlet Sales Festival, which is held in St. Petersburg in Russia at the end of the school year. The annual event is part of the famous White Nights Festival, traditionally held in summer, with spectacular fireworks, numerous music concerts, and a massive water show. Normally, thousands of domestic and foreign tourists flock to the city to watch the colorful event. But this year, the COVID-19 pandemic limited the number of the attendees. The festival began in the 1960s when several Russian schools united to celebrate the end of the academic year. That is in connection with the symbolism of the popular 1922 children's book, Scarlet Sails, by Alexander Grimm. Indonesia is dealing with a surge in coronavirus infections, but that has not stopped the people from observing the Yatnya Kasada Festival. Thousands of people brave the climb to the summit of Mount Bromo in eastern Java province to observe the ancient ritual. They made offerings ranging from fruits and crops to livestock by throwing the items to the pit of an active volcano. They believe the practice brings blessings and plenitude and helps them express gratitude for what they have. This year's festival was overshadowed by the coronavirus pandemic, with participants required to adhere to strict health protocols. China's space agency has released videos of its first Mars rover as it's exploring the red planet's surface. The rover is named Zhurong. It's now investigating a vast plane known as Utopia Planitia on Mars's northern hemisphere. The rover successfully landed on Mars in mid-May. It is studying the red planet's surface rocks and atmosphere. It also looks for signs of life, including any subsurface water or ice. The solar-powered Chinese robot weighs around 240 kilograms and has 6 wheels. China is the second country after the U.S. to operate a rover on Mars. A university in the Venezuelan capital Caracas has turned its roof into a garden and uses sustainable energy to light up its classes. The roof of Andres Bello Catholic University is covered with plants and 30 solar panels. The panels, along with a wind turbine, produce the 7,400 watts of electricity to illuminate that area and light 2 rooms in the building. The roof is now functioning as a self-sufficient and environmentally friendly open-air classroom. The proposal for the project was put forward by 2 students. The aim is to educate people about renewable energy and the threat of climate change.
A small New Hampshire town has been hit by a series of car break-ins over the last few weeks. People were shocked when they finally discovered the mischievous criminal. A large black bear has been identified as the bandit, wreaking havoc in the town of Thornton. The naughty mammal was caught on camera as it got on its 2 hind legs and skillfully opened the door of a car. Police say the bear was most likely rummaging for food. Authorities have asked people to remove food from their cars to avoid enticing the troublesome animal. A Jordanian woman is receiving high demands for the soap she produces. Why? Because she uses an unusual ingredient. Lara Altiti makes soap out of camel milk. She tours different cities in Jordan to find the best camel farms for her business. Titi uses camel milk as the major ingredient for the soap she produces. That's because she says it has rich benefits and contains more vitamins than cow milks.
The first stage includes weighing the soap, and I include different kinds of oil to preserve the quality of the soap and its therapeutic benefit. We need to have high foam and tough consistency, and we don't want it to be rancid. We place high importance on the therapeutic material that we add during the production process.
Kitty started her soap line at home using a manual process and then expanded it to an independent workshop. Her soap line has now become very popular in Jordan. Kitty produces more than 4,000 soap bars a month. She tells them to both sells them both to domestic and international customers.
If you're a car lover, this story is for you. Over 300 classic vehicles have taken part in a retro rally across Estonia. The 1,000-kilometer rally kicked off in the town of Perde. It drew participants from Latvia and Finland. Their motto is Straight Ahead to the Past. The vintage cars participated in the event are mostly produced between 1930 and 1980. Experts say all the vehicles are in good condition. However, they doubt if all the vehicles can make it to the end of the five-day rally.
German firm's electric air taxi takes its first flight at a show in an airport near the French capital, Paris. Volocopter's flying taxi, which looks like a tiny helicopter, took off and landed vertically over the airport with no passenger on board during a three-minute trial. Aside from its two-passenger capacity, the aircraft also has some room for luggage. It flew a 500-meter route at speeds of up to 30 kilometers per hour and 30 meters high along the airfield. The flying taxi service would first be operated by a licensed pilot, but the flight would be fully automated over a period of time.
With respect to regulation, initially we will have a fully certified, fully licensed helicopter pilot, just to fit into existing regulation. But we believe over time it can be much simpler to obtain such an operating license for a volocopter. And of course, in the last instance, we want to take a pilot requirement out and we want these vehicles to fly fully automated. So you will not need a pilot license anymore. You can just summon the volocopter. It will come and pick you up and bring you safely to your destination.
The German firm is entering the urban mobility market with high hopes of playing a major role in the infant industry. Volocopter says its objective is to have a service in operation for 2024 for the 2024 Olympic Games. Walking around the city without shoes can be delightful. If you're interested in the experience, visit the Russian capital. A 3.5 kilometer long barefoot trail has recently opened in Moscow's Elk Island Park. It's made of various materials such as pine bark, beach pebbles, and clay. Taking around 40 minutes to complete, the path attracts hundreds of visitors every day. However, some people find it difficult to walk without shoes, calling the path a torture trail. A zoo in Turkey has welcomed a baby elephant from an endangered species. The birth of a female calf at Izmir Wildlife Park has caused excitement in keepers and visitors. The calf, yet to be named, is the third offspring of parents from Asian species. The International Union for the Conservation of Nature classifies the Asian elephant as endangered due to their rapid decline in the wild. The Asian elephants are primarily threatened by poaching, fragmentation, and loss and degradation of habitat. Currently, around 20 to 40,000 Asian elephants are living across the world, five of which inhabiting Turkey's Izmir Zoo.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Raditu billahi rabba wa bil islam dina.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brothers and sisters, Salamun Alaikum. So welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. We're going to speak about the manner of disagreement. I invite you to join with us. Today, Saturday, is the 22nd of Zilqa'da, 1442 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 12th of Tir, 1400 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 3rd of July, 2021 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. As usual, we open this program by listening to Surah Al-Kahf, verse 6.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Inna ja'alna ma 'ala al-ardi zinatan laha linabluwahum ayyuhum ahsanu 'amala.
Indeed, we have made that which is on the earth adornment for it, that we may test them as to which of them is best indeed.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
This verse refers to the utmost sympathy of the prophets. It seems that the prophet has been resembled to a person who observes that this most beloved manners are separating from him, and he is looking at that with sigh from behind their backs. Sympathy and regret upon others' aberration is a value, and the Prophet, peace be upon him and his pure progeny, is always the most compassionate one among people. A leader should be mindful of the improvement of the believers and deeds of people, and he ought not to cease looking after them. The manner of disagreement is the topic of this episode of today's special. With respect to the perception of truth, disagreement is an ancient phenomenon in the intellectual history of mankind. The belief that there is only one truth does not detract from the possibility of how it is arrived at. This is a matter open to everyone to pursue within his or her social and intellectual means. This pursuit, however, should not be to serve a person's self-interests. We must take into consideration the fact that our intellectual life is based on an exchange of opinions and ideas that vary. This often reflects distinct culture, sociological, psychological, and intellectual influences. Diversity leads to differences in perspective and understanding, and naturally to some disagreement. Differences of opinion are inevitable wherever people possess intellect and honesty. Dr. Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
In this episode, we are going to be concerned with manners of disagreement. As we know, in all human communities, it happens to everybody that there are some disagreements among, some groups of people, some systems of management, or some individuals, and that's quite natural because everybody, based on his or her priorities or preferences, or for example, education, culture, and so on, may disagree with something else that he or she notices to come out from the other side. However, in this regard, we want to concentrate on how to manage such manners of disagreement or such cases of disagreement. In the Islamic culture and Islamic education, we find that there is a principle which is called the principles of toleration or tolerance. This tolerance or toleration comes from the point that in Islam we find that everybody, everybody, each and every Muslim is instructed, is taught to apply tolerance, to show tolerance and toleration with regard to other people, so long as there's no discrimination whatsoever.
IRIB English Radio presents today's special, Every Day for 15 Minutes.
Be like the sun, shining with light. Be like a rose, spreading its fragrance in every part.
Today's special.
Be like the earth, humble and wise. Be like the rain.
This is IRIB English and today's special with smart ways to disagree with someone respectfully. One of them is know when to move on. That cliche catchphrase, agree to disagree, is oft repeated for a reason. It can be a handy sentiment to lean on when you need it. Perhaps one of the most important piece of respectfully disagreeing with someone is knowing when you need to just call it quits and move on. No, it's not always easy to swallow your pride and walk away, particularly when you feel strongly about your side. But sometimes it's the best thing you can do. Disagreements are inevitable, but there is definitely a wrong way and a right way to present your own arguments.
It's impossible to find two people who are identical. Why? Because we are human beings and we have been endowed with the freedom of thoughts, with the freedom of choice. We have been endowed with the brain, with reason, with aql. So definitely we differ over issues. A husband and wife, they can differ. Two brothers, a father and his son, two sisters, two friends, they differ in their opinions. Even if they agree 80%, there is another 20% room for difference of opinions. And this is the sunnah, the tradition of this life. God mentions in chapter 30th, Surah Ar-Rum, verse 22, وَمِنْ آيَاتِهِ خَلْقُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ وَاخْتِلَافُ أَلْسِنَتِكُمْ وَأَلْوَانِكُمْ إِنَّ فِي ذَلِكَ لَآيَاتٍ لِلْعَالِمِينَ. Among your Lord's signs, the creation of heaven and earth, and the variation of your colors, of your tongues and your colors. So you are different. You people are different, not only in your culture, not only in your language. See how many languages we have here in this room now. Some people speak their native language is Urdu. Some speak Pashtun, some speak Farsi, some speak Arabic, some speak Swahili, and other languages, and English and French. And so these are the signs of God's creation. اختلاف ألسنتكم وألوانكم. Your languages are different, your colors are different, and of course your opinions are different too. In another verse Allah says, وَمَا كَانَ النَّاسُ Surah Yunus, chapter 10. وَمَا كَانَ النَّاسُ إِلَّا أُمَّةً وَاحِدًا At some point, people were exactly the same. Even in Europe, in their opinion, they were the same. There were no difference between them. No differences, no disagreements. But when was that? That was at the beginning of the creation. Life was not sophisticated. People were not advanced. They did not have knowledge. They did not go to school. So they believed in the same idea. But then that was before the time of Noah. Life was very primitive. Very primitive, very basic. Even human reason and human brain was very simple. But once they started to advance, the more knowledge you get, the better opinion you have. And then definitely you're going to be different from your sister, from your brother, from your husband, from your wife, from your neighbor. You develop your own ideas. Maybe in the past, you follow your father, you follow your teacher, you follow your older brother. But once you study yourself, you start discovering things, you develop your own ideas. So there is no harm in having different opinions. But where is the harm then? The harm when we fight, when we are intolerant towards each other, when we try to silence our adversaries, people who disagree with us, we try to shut them down, to silence them. They have no right to speak. They have no right to present their ideas because they are wrong and I am right. I am always right and they are always wrong. This is the harm here. This is the bad thing here.
I wonder why you and me fight each other. Don't you see the similarities between us? Take a minute and see yourself in the mirror. You look like me, those eyes, lips you can't deny. Have you thought about why we look the same, why we feel the same? Don't tell me it's by chance. Oh,
now agree to disagree, accepting differences. It's only gross ignorance and egoism that leads any person to blasphemously believe that there is no room for disputing his or her opinion. This is unfortunate that this inability to respect and respect other people's opinion is so deep-rooted in our socio-political environment that it is often considered part of religiosity. Many religious leaders, organizations, and institutions have not rid themselves of the destructive and predictable legacy of desiring to be contentious rather than conciliatory.
Shukran ya Rabbi, shukran. Hadayta qalbi, shukran.
That was all for today's special. So we'll continue this topic inshallah on the next episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Until then, believe you under Allah's protection.
يا ربي يا رحمن شكرا يا رب
شكرا يا رب
يا
منزل القرآن يا خالق الإنسان يا ربي يا رحمن شكرا يا رب.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.